You are flying high on Locked On Eagles, your source for the best Philadelphia Eagles news and analysis, brought to you by LockedOnEagles.com. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow my work at Inside the Pylon, Breaking Football, and Grandstand Sports Network. Follow me on Twitter at Michael J. Kist. As always, I am joined by the best co-host in the game. He is Benjamin Solak of Bleeding Green Nation and NDT Scouting. You can follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Ben, 50 burger for the Eagles. How you doing, brother?
I am positively giddy. I am jubilant. I am all the things, man. It's 31 points against the Denver defense that did not give up more than 30 points in a first half in a regular season game since 2010. Been 7 seasons since that happened. That was something else.
419 total yards. Look, we're going to get into it, but the thing that impressed me most about this game, the offensive game plan that we built coming into it, we did so many things to open things up for us against a defense that was good in the secondary, good on the pass rush, solid against the run. It was the little things. You know, you get the tight end next to Von Miller and you do the hard count, right? Mm-hmm. The Denver defense is so keyed in on cadences and little intricacies like that. They will tee off on stuff like that when they get a beat. So we caught them off sides. Last I counted was 3 times. And Von was definitely guilty of jumping off sides there.
Foles even got him once. Foles got him a 4th time.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. And then, like, you look at the stuff, like, you know, you tag the inside zone with the speed out and you hit that. You show that smoke route for 8 games, and then you end up going vertical with it with Alshon, who beats Aqib after Aqib had bitten hard on the action. Mm-hmm. You leave Von unblocked, or you have Clement looking like he's going to block Von Miller in the red zone, and then he just releases right off of him. We did a zone review, the same thing. Like, we said, basically, we're either going to make Von work through a bunch of trash, or we're just not going to block him at all. We're going to scheme around him. So what did you think about the offensive game plan for the Eagles in this game?
Oh, you already know how I feel about Doug Peterson, how he comes in with his offensive schemes. This was, again, another game where, you know, Carson broke a couple more records, took, you know, a firm hand on the touchdown lead in the NFL now with 4 through the air this week, which another fantastic number for him. And obviously the other guy who was competing for it, Deshaun Watson, you know, poor one out for Deshaun, who's not going to be playing the rest of the year. That's rough. But, you know, Carson had that fantastic of a day, 118.7 passer rating for Wentz. But, you know, touchdowns, as we talked about this with Alshon, which I'm sure we'll talk about Alshon's performance in a little bit, how touchdowns are a bit of a misleading stat because they're the product of opportunity. You know, obviously Carson, again, did an amazing job getting the offense down there. But, you know, his day overall, like, you know, was just solid, good Carson day. Like, it was just Carson being Carson. He was playing fantastic. What really beat this Broncos team was the game plan coming in, as you said, by Doug Peterson. And you know, when you're looking for that information, look no further than, you know, to start off the game, Philly goes touchdown, field goal, touchdown on the first 3 drives, you know.
That's game planning, yeah.
Yeah, 7 plays, 6 plays, and 3 plays. That's, you know, that's 16 plays right there. Most of those are going to be scripted, especially, you know, coming off that interception, that 3-play touchdown drive where you're all in the red zone. Those are your scripted red zone plays. You know, we saw the little Corey Clement, you know, little pitch play they took from Kansas City. You know, we saw Carson Wentz audibling on 4th-and-1 inside of the red zone, right? Just they Peterson knows how to attack your defense. He does. It doesn't matter really what scheme you play. And it was funny because on the halftime show, CBS had the call on the halftime show. I believe it was Nate Burleson who made the point that, you know, this Eagle offense, he really respects them because they come out and they do whatever they want to do and they force you to adjust to it. And I found that an interesting comment because really it feels like what the Eagles do is maximize your weaknesses, right? It's not so much of we're going to do our thing and you've got to come stop it. It's we're going to figure out what you can't do very well and then we can accomplish that. We can execute that because we're so versatile.
Yeah, and a weak point for the Broncos was their terrible, terrible offense, which was 3.8 yards per play, which is just Brock Osweiler was exactly who we thought he was. He ends up throwing 2 interceptions, probably going to throw him like 10. There were some serious dropped interceptions in this game. He was super scared of the pressure that we were generating. He was constantly trying to escape the pocket. You could just tell that he was not comfortable all day, sacked 3 times, I believe. The Eagles defense did what they needed to do. They shut down the run. Mm-hmm. So the Broncos only had 1 first down via rushes, which they needed to accomplish a lot more than that if they wanted to be effective against this Eagles defense. I thought the corners played well. I thought the line played well. Did anybody in particular stand out for you as far as that goes? And what'd you think of Brock Terrible Osweiler?
All right, Malcolm Jenkins is too good at linebacker. It's like not fair, right? In the sense that he's not the greatest linebacker, but you really don't notice sometimes that he's playing in that position. And I was hypersensitive to it because coming into the game, one of the main things I wanted the Eagles to do was attack the defensive backs that play linebacker for the Broncos, because they line up those Darian Stewart and Simmons, they line up their safeties in these linebacker positions very often. But Jenkins is just a good linebacker, and he's a good corner, and he's a good safety. You can do whatever you want. I think that some folks had kind of this resurgence, but we've already talked about this here on the pod, where Vinnie Curry's playing really good football. And, it's tricky because I don't think he's yet playing to the worth of his contract. But, does he maybe restructure now and take a more team-friendly deal that'll keep him in Philadelphia now that he's been a little more productive? Who knows with that? But Curry's been playing very, very well. And then I'm going to keep beating the drum. I'm sorry. I know he dropped the pick, even though it would have been a tough one. But Rasul Douglas is playing very good football at corner. And it's a little bit not noticed, a little bit under the radar, because Patrick Robinson's playing really, really good football, and because Jalen Mills is playing good football for Jalen Mills, and Douglas doesn't see a significant amount of playing time as a rookie. They don't really leave him out in the field, and I can understand why, because I think he gives up the most big plays that you're going to have of your current corners just by his style of play, and so you'd rather just keep the guys who are playing well in there, tackle what's in front of you, because you understand you're not really playing at full strength in that secondary yet, which... we're not playing at full strength in the secondary yet, which is still crazy. But man, Sewell just sees it quick, attacks it quick, and he's incredibly lengthy, lets him be very disruptive. He's playing good football, and it's going to be very interesting to see what happens there.
Yeah, real quick, I just want to remind you guys that rate, review, leave your Twitter handle in the review in iTunes for Locked On Eagles enters you to win a free chance at a PFF Edge subscription. We weren't hurt by the deep ball at all, obviously. They had plays of 32 to Cody Latimer and plays to 30 to Emmanuel Sanders. And other than that, I mean, Demaryius Thomas was the only one that could get open on us consistently. He had 8 catches for 70 yards and a touchdown, but his long was 14 yards. We did a good job of containing that offense, creating pressure, moving Brock off the spot, things of that nature. What I want to talk about now is our new toy, our new shiny toy. Jay Ajayi, 8 carries, 77 yards, and a monster 46-yard run. I saw this on Twitter where someone had put up, they had photoshopped Jay Ajayi into the hole through which he ran, and he was able to duplicate him 5 more times. So 6 Jay Ajayis could have fit through that hole that we made for him, which for him, coming from that Miami line that was so terrible, where he was so stifled for the entire year and had to create so much after contact last year, has to be an absolute breath of fresh air for him. And then you've got Corey Clement, who scored 3 touchdowns on the day. LeGarrette Blount with a 4.1 average. Smallwood came in at the end with a 26-yarder. So this run game looks it's a really, when it comes down to it, all 4 of those guys have played well when they've been on the field. With Smallwood, it's mainly just a health thing, but that's a nice four-headed monster, if you ask me.
Absolutely, and so much hay was made of Ajayi's yards per carry coming into the game, and kind of this debate about, was it his offensive line? Is he trying to create when he shouldn't be? So on and so forth. Well, obviously, you've got the big one. He ripped off 46 yards for the touchdown there at the end of the half, which was a great play and just exemplified Ajayi. I mean, yeah, you're right, huge hole. But the burst and then the long speed to finish. I mean, the guy who was running down the field and was able to beat the angle of the safety, right? Safety's got a pretty good beat on him. The guy who was able to beat him to the pylon is 230 pounds, which is not small, right? So like that speed to size ratio is really sweet. But even taking away that 46 yarder, 7 carries in limited reps, obviously coming in. I mean, Corey Clement had the most carries for the Eagles, and what the heck, Corey Clement? What? 3 touchdowns on the day, like being used in like key situations. Corey's just, I mean, what a dude. But anyway, JJ, even if you take away the 46-yarder, that's 7 carries for 31 yards. So he's above a 4.0 yard per carry, right? He's about 4.1, 4.2, which is fantastic, right? And so even in initial reps, just, you know, with limited touches, you can already see that just having that blocking scheme wakes things up for Ajayi. And yeah, I mean, I really focused on running the ball on that Denver defense because, you know, you kind of heard, you were lied to by stats a little bit. The Denver defense came in as the second best defense besides the Eagles with 72.9 yards allowed per game. But over their past three games, they had allowed over 100 yards on average. They had really been struggling in that three-game skid on which they were. And, you know, same thing continued with the Philadelphia Eagles hanging 197 rushing yards on them, right? And it didn't get much better from there. And how about Philadelphia with a six-game streak rushing for 100 yards while also allowing less than 100 yards rushing by the opposing team, right? That's good for fifth longest streak ever. It's tied with a bunch of people. There are a few teams that have 7 and a few teams that have 8, then 9, 10, and 12. But hey, that's impressive.
I want to ask you, what aspect of the game where we had success most shocked you? As far as, was it receivers getting opened or being game planned open and us executing that way, whether it be the offensive line that didn't allow a single pressure, and we've been talking about them every day incessantly on social media about how we're worried about Vaughn and Vaughn's going to line up over Vitae, which didn't really happen, and he's not going to be able to handle Barrett or Ray or whatever the case is. You know, we got to do all this extra stuff and it's going to limit our offense. It didn't at all. So that was it for me.
Right. I know that's
was the way we were able to take care of Vaughn. We were able to do that. Outside of that, or along with that, what shocked you most about this game that you really didn't see coming? And if you were to have to bet, you would have bet against it coming into it.
Yeah, it's definitely the offensive line play. And you kind of broke into that. And I always struggle to have offensive line takes off of the broadcast film just because you see so little. Right. I will say that, you know, obviously Big V barely heard his name called, which is fantastic given the task up against which he was. You know, Lane Johnson had a little bit of a scare there, but went right back in, which was good. I was blown away by the game Jason Kelce had against nose tackle Demonte Pecco, who's a animal.
Pecco's played well this season. Yeah, I agree.
He's absurd the power he has in the middle, and we know that Kelce can struggle with that. You know, I said it flat out, I haven't seen Kelce play any better, and as far as, you know, recent memory goes, I haven't seen a center play better than Kelsey's playing. You know, Travis Frederick, very good player. Alex Mack, insanely good player. Even this Matt Paradis, who the Broncos have, is one of the top centers in the game. But I haven't seen a center impact the game the way Kelce does with how much the Eagles move him into space. So, you know, that's the quick hit on the offensive line. But I will, you know, I'm going to take my medicine here and say that, you know, I was shocked by the game that Alshon Jeffrey put out. And I've been, you know, we've been
critical
of Jeffrey for sure. Now, there's two aspects to think of here, right? I'm going to take my medicine on one, but I'm not taking my medicine on the other. Because if you tell me that, oh, Alshon is wide receiver one and the scheme needs wide receiver one, you're wrong. And if anything, today proved that this game against the Broncos. Because if you're telling me that Alshon absorbs all of this attention that opens up Zach Ertz, well, then when Zach Ertz, the tight end, is out, he's injured, then Alshon should receive even more attention. And it should be harder for him to do things. That is the opposite of what happened. When Zach Ertz was out, then the Philadelphia Eagle offense turned to Alshon and ran some scripted plays like the now screen go route option that you talked about for the touchdown, right? That that second touchdown Jeffrey caught was a perfect example. He ran essentially the route and same play design that Zach Ertz scored on last week.
Right.
Except this time it was Alshon because Ertz, their primary red zone threat, wasn't there. So I'm still not, you know, buying the whole, oh, the Eagles need a wide receiver one to run this offense. You know, Alshon's talent is being maximized. That's still there. That being said, if you had told me that after a couple of cupcake weeks, Alshon was going to wake up against Aqib Talib,
like
who's a very, very good cornerback. And like, if you don't watch a lot of Broncos, you don't watch a lot of the NFL. Aqib Talib is a very, very good cornerback, and Alshon made him look pedestrian. Right. I have no idea where that came from. Alshon should have to wear the all-black jerseys for the rest of the year.
Yeah, and look, I didn't see it coming either. I had dropped an article on LockedOnEagles.com saying, you know, I hope that Aqib doesn't follow Jeffrey around because it's going to be a very bad day for Jeffrey. And he didn't really shadow him like that. But like you said, he made him look pedestrian. And this Broncos secondary, I've seen it a lot to where they just beat these wide receivers up so much and just sap their will from them. And that didn't happen at all this game. Our receivers were fighting the entire way. And one thing I want to touch on, man, because we haven't really talked about him, Carson Wentz, our Pontifex Maximus, 15 for 27, 199 yards, 4 touchdowns, man. And look, because of Ertz going down, instead what we do is we feature Jeffrey more often. We scheme him open more often. And then we also throw the ball to 7 different receivers. Jeffrey, Burton, Celek, Aguilar.
There he is.
Clement, Torrey Smith, and Mac Hollins all had catches in this game. 3 of them had touchdowns. That was Clement, Trey Burton, who showed up very early in the game, and then Jeffrey had 2 touchdowns.
Son.
So how did you – I thought Wentz did an excellent job at the line, and I can't wait to see the all 22 to see what he's seeing, to see what he's switching into, why he's switching into it, so on and so forth, because you get a better look at that rather than the broadcast film. I thought he did an excellent job at the line just from some of the looks that we were getting pre-snap to post-snap. How did you feel about Wentz's performance?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, as I alluded to, and I was kind of getting into this conversation. I want to hear your thoughts on it. It's a very reciprocal relationship, but I'm of the school that Doug has done more for Wentz than Wentz has done for Doug, or the sense that Doug kind of has done more for the organization than Wentz has, and a lot of Wentz's success is the product of Doug. That's not to take anything away from Wentz, just to say that, you know, I'm amazed with what Peterson has done as far as personnel and his scheme have gone. That being said, what really it encapsulates everything for me for Carson Wentz right now is the way that he has minimized his mistakes in the red zone and with the interceptable passes. That's been the biggest thing for me. I mean, so we had a day, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions for Carson today. Obviously, over the past 5 weeks now, that's a grand total of 17 touchdowns to 3 interceptions. Who? What? The same guy? The 16 to 14 ratio. I remember when we did the over-unders, which we're going to visit later this week. I was relatively certain Carson was going to push 18 interceptions.
Right. Yeah.
I said, you know, I said, and this was before even the whole interceptable passes debacle of this year went on. I said, Carson threw a lot of interceptable balls that were dropped. I expect his interception numbers to go up. I'm okay with that as long as his touchdown numbers go up too. His touchdown numbers are skyrocketing. But at the same time, he has done such a better job protecting the football.
Yeah.
And that alone, beyond improving the deep ball, beyond the ability to go through progressions, just keeping the offense on track, stopping, preventing the other team from getting short fields. Again, we bring it back to the Eagles are 8-1, and without a turnover inside the 30, without that interception against the Chiefs, that's a one possession game, right?
Yeah.
This Carson's ability to protect the football is what has just, for me, brought him up multiple levels as far as the quarterback tiers go.
And then you look at it, man. Well, we've got a bye week coming up, and then it's a rivalry week with the Cowboys, followed by the Bears, 2 very winnable games, Seahawks, Rams, Giants, Raiders, Cowboys. It's going to be a fun back half of the season. We talked about this a lot, to where if we have to be hot in the beginning of the season, because it gets tough towards the end with those 2 Cowboys games, the Seahawks games, the Rams summarily just drubbed the Giants today and hung a lot of points on them and made them look amateurish. So they're a team to look out for as well. Jared Goff is playing really well. Todd Gurley has had a resurgence. And we are recording this during the 4 o'clock games. Right now, as I see it, Dallas is up 21-17 on Kansas City, and Washington and Seattle are kind of in a slugfest here, and it's real close. So, you know, the victors of those two, we'll talk more around the NFL tomorrow. And kind of get into what we saw on the second viewing of the Eagles and the Broncos game. But, man, you talked about a game that everyone was worried about, potential trap game. We can't block them. We can't get open. And we said a lot of those things. We echoed a lot of those sentiments. Like, how are we going to win this game? It was going to have to be via getting turnovers by Brock and setting us up with good field position. We got that, and then we got a whole lot of more. You know what I mean? And that's encouraging to see, to have a team come out and execute like that against tough competition, against a tough defense, and just be able to get the job done and look brilliant while doing it. We didn't luck into things. This was all by design. It wasn't a couple of fluke plays or some weird turnovers or whatever the case is. This was a game plan that we executed, that we came in, we outcoached them, and we coached them out the building, that we executed them under the stadium, essentially. So,
yeah.
Any other thoughts on this game or what we have coming up this week? Ben, man, the floor is yours.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so we got, you know, 9 episodes left before we see the Cowboys 2 Sundays from now. So we'll fill that with a ton of content. Some midseason evals, kind of getting ready for that Dallas game. Obviously, there's a lot to unpack. We still see the Cowboys twice. And if they're able to pull it off against the Chiefs, they're 2.5 games back. So they're, you know, by no means are they, you know, kind of out of it. Now, of course, something big to watch moving forward as the Eagles' next game is the Cowboys game is the situation with the Ezekiel Elliott suspension. You know, he received the temporary injunction at some point this week. There will be a ruling by the little, you know, panel of judges. There are 3 of them. I don't even know what anything is called anymore, but there should be more news about that this week. Obviously, if he's suspended for 6 games, he's missing the first game between the Eagles and the Philadelphia, the Eagles and the Cowboys, that being the one in Dallas on the 19th. Yeah, you know, you have that Dallas game, then you should have an easy one at home against the Bears, and then it's 3 away games, Seahawks, Rams, Giants. Giants shouldn't be a problem, but those 2 games on the West Coast against 2 very good teams who will be positioning for playoff seeding and for potentially their division are going to be huge. So, Eagles are at 8-1. You know, if Cowboys win this, it's a different conversation. If the Chiefs are able to knock off the Cowboys, that puts the Cowboys at 4-4, then, you know, 10 wins should do it for the Eagles to win this division. And with the Bears, the Giants, and the Raiders still on the schedule, you know, 10 wins shouldn't be a problem. So, you know, keep an eye on this Cowboys-Chiefs game. If they, you know, if the Chiefs win it, Eagles should be pretty comfortable moving forward for the division. Then it becomes about getting that home field advantage, and that's where those games with the Seahawks and the Rams become important.
Yeah, look, guys, just because it's bye week doesn't mean you're taking the week off. We are putting out tons of cool stuff. I'm going to have the we're going to do some around the NFL stuff, some film review stuff tomorrow. Hopefully the All-22 gets out soon, but we're going to be breaking that down as well, dropping content on LockedOnEagles.com. I'm going to have my 1980 Eagles versus Dallas Cowboys memories of a rivalry coming out for the Wednesday show, which is going to be amazing. And from there, we're going to start in that episode. We're going to announce some of the guests that we're going to be having on that week and the following week as well. We're going to have a lot of great Eagles people, a lot of great Cowboys people as well to help us preview this game. And like Ben said, we're going to be taking a look at where we are midseason with our over-unders and different things like that. So remember, keep it locked on here on Locked On Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly.